So the first reading this morning is from Exodus chapter 7, verses 8 to 12. That's on page 49 of the Bibles in front of you. Page 49 in the Church Bible, Exodus chapter 7, starting at verse 8 and following through to verse 12. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Prove yourselves by working a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.'" So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs.
Well, good morning, everyone. Let me add my welcome to Ben's. And we're going to have our second reading from the New Testament now. So if you flick forward in your Bibles to page 865, we're in Luke chapter 8, continuing our series in Luke's Gospel, where we left off last week. You can also find the reading on the inside of the service sheets that you received as you came in as well. So Luke chapter 8. And I'll read from verse 26. Then they, that's Jesus and his disciples, sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. When Jesus had stepped out on land, there met him a man from the city who had demons. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he had not lived in a house but among the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him and said with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many a time it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles. But he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. When the herdsmen saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. Then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with Jesus. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." And he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. Well, we're going to look at those verses in some detail together, and you'll find a bit of an outline of where we're going on the inside of your service sheets. And as we start, I wanted to think a bit about solutions to different problems that we face in our lives. I guess there's different types of problems we have, isn't there? One example might be problems that you get around the house. So, for example, in the last year or so, we had our spice rack, which was attached to the wall by these kind of sticky plastery things, fall off the wall. So we had to resolve the problem, come up with a solution. So we got our tools out, got the drill out, drilled the spice rack firmly into the wall. Maybe also you have problems with online purchases sometimes, maybe things you buy on Amazon or elsewhere. Recently we had, well, this isn't actually that recent, it's probably a year ago or so now. We had a pair of jeans that we'd ordered online and they were taking ages to arrive. And so our solution was we called up the customer service and we said, you know, where are these jeans? and then they got lost in transit somewhere, so we were sent a new pair. So there's different sorts of problems we face in our lives, isn't there? But actually, we're going to think about an issue and a problem that is much more serious than those kind of trivialities today. We're thinking, as we've been thinking in the service so far, about actually the issue of evil in the world. And I put a question on your sheets, which we're going to think about throughout this sermon. What is the solution to evil in our world? No one can deny, can they, that evil is a reality in the world that we live in. There's all sorts of human evil we see around us, isn't there? I learned a bit recently about human trafficking, where people and victims are transported and exploited for profit, sometimes in the sex industry, sometimes in other types of forced labor. But I just read some of the survivor stories of people who've experienced and been through that kind of horrific experience. And it really is quite distressing to read. It's not the sort of thing you want to do too regularly, to be honest. And some of the details you wouldn't really want to share publicly. It's horrible to read about the sorts of experiences people have in that industry. Alongside that, I learned recently a bit more about the drug trafficking industry as well, and particularly about county lines. Maybe some of you have heard of this, where, again, victims are exploited and they're used to transport drugs by gangs, usually from major cities out into more rural areas. But there was a couple of things I found quite shocking about this. One thing was the age of the victims. So one source said that even as young as 9, some children are used in this kind of county lines exploitation. And secondly, just more generally, their experience and the way that if you try and cut ties with some of these gangs, then there's, you know, threats against your own life, threats against members of your family's lives. You just feel stuck, wouldn't you? It'd be a horrible experience. But that's the kind of world we live in, isn't it? A world of evil. And what is the solution to that? I guess there's different kinds of solutions, isn't there, that we could offer. There's, you could call them preventive solutions, where you try and stop the evils before they start. So I guess with that example, with the drug trafficking industry, you could have school education from a young age and help people to be aware of the dangers of getting involved and being lured into those sorts of things. Alongside preventive solutions, you could have more corrective solutions, couldn't you? Where maybe you try and stop the evils after they start. I guess that might be something more like some form of policing crackdown on the drug trade. And of course, these solutions are good things, aren't they? But actually, on another level, they don't get to the heart of the matter. We still live in a world, don't we, where there is human trafficking and where there is drug trafficking. And actually, the Bible would say that the reason for that is because human evil is really only a symptom of the problem. Actually, behind human evil is the much more fundamental source of evil, if you like, spiritual evil. Now, maybe, I don't know what people here think about spiritual evil, but I'd imagine that for some of us, maybe we're a bit skeptical. Maybe it's the kind of thing we read about in fantasy fiction stories and isn't really something to be thought of in the real world. And it's just worth us asking ourselves, isn't it, if that is us, whether that skepticism actually just comes from a kind of modern Western predisposition. I mean, for those of us who are born in the West here, it's worth asking ourselves, isn't it? You know, if we grew up in a different place at a different time, would we believe those things? I think the answer is almost definitely not. Most other cultures and most other times have believed in the reality of spiritual evil. And that is the reality that we come face to face with in our passage today. So let me just read to you from verse 26. That's page 865, if you've closed your Bibles. Verse 26. Then they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. When Jesus had stepped out on land, there met him a man from the city who had demons. So demons, the spiritual evil, is what this man that Jesus meets in this country of the Gerasenes is experiencing. And just like with human evil, so too with spiritual evil, it has an awful effect on this man. He lives in this kind of subhuman way. So let me read on in verse 27. For a long time, he had worn no clothes and he had not lived in a house, but among the tombs. So this man, he's living in this kind of nakedness, homelessness among the tombs. And, you know, his basic human needs aren't even being met, are they? It's a kind of subhuman existence that he has. And not only does he live in a subhuman way, actually also he's treated by the community in a subhuman way. So just look at those brackets in verse 29. For many a time, the demons had seized the man. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles. You know, the community, they confine him like he's some kind of animal or beast in the community, some kind of out of control animal. I mean, just imagine what this man's lost to get to this point. He would have lost his family. He would have lost any friendships that he had. He would have lost his job. It's an awful thing, isn't it, to see what spiritual evil can do to a person. And what is the solution to human evil, to spiritual evil in our world? Well, we're going to see today that the answer is less of a what answer and more of a who answer. So you'll see on your sheets, the first point for today, Jesus is the solution to evil in our world. And what we get in this passage is like a taster and a sample of the ultimate solution that Jesus will bring, seen in Jesus' defeat of evil here in this passage. So we're just going to see two things about this defeat. Firstly, the ease of the defeat from Jesus, and secondly, the result of the defeat. So we'll start with the ease of the defeat. And I guess with these demons, we would expect them to fight against Jesus, wouldn't we? Just have a look at verse 29, where we left off. And we saw how he was kept under guard, bound with chains and shackles. But this man, under the possession of these demons, he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. I mean, this isn't a man who likes to be, a demon that likes to be restrained, is it? He seems like he's probably up for a fight. And yet what we see in this passage is no fighting against Jesus. Actually, all these demons do is they plead with Jesus. They beg him for mercy. Just see if you can see all the times that we get requests from the demons to Jesus in this passage. Let me read from verse 28 and see how many you can spot. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him and said with a loud voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many a time it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss. Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and drowned. There's lots of things in that passage, isn't there, that they plead of Jesus for. So you see what they plead with him not to do. Verse 28, "I beg you, do not torment me," they say to Jesus. "Jesus, don't hurt us." And a similar thing in verse 31, "And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss." And then we see what they plead with him to do. So verse 32, "Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him to let them enter these." There really is no fight here, is there? Jesus easily wins the battle. I don't know if there's any boxing fans in the room, but I hear that there's a very famous fight that happened in the 1970s between a guy called Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali. And I think apparently the reason that this was such a great fight and sort of named the fight of the century is because they were really evenly matched opponents. So, you know, the kind of two heavyweight champions of the day. But actually, this battle in this passage is nothing like that, is it? Actually, it's much more like those two boxers come into the ring, the bell goes off, the fight begins, and immediately one of them is down on their face, crying and pleading, asking for pity from Jesus. That is much more what it's like, isn't it? Jesus defeats these demons. He defeats evil easily. That's the ease of the defeat. And secondly, the result of the defeat. And this is just a really beautiful thing, actually, seeing this man's transformation and the way his life changes when Jesus gets rid of these demons from him. So firstly, we see the way that this man is restored. He no longer lives in this subhuman way. He's no longer treated in this subhuman way. Let me read verse 35. "Then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus," and here's the key word, "clothed." This man who was naked at the beginning, he's no longer naked. He's been restored by Jesus. Or something similar in verse 39. Jesus sends this man away and he says, return to your home. It's wonderful, isn't it? This man who was homeless, who lived among the tombs, no longer homeless. He's restored. He can get his life back on track. You know, he can go and live with his family again, maybe. Maybe he can go and reform some of those childhood friendships that were just ruined when the demons became part of his life. Maybe he can return to an old job that he used to have. Jesus restores him, doesn't he? And actually, wonderfully, this transformation actually goes above and beyond that. It's not just kind of getting back to neutral. Actually, it's beyond that. So we see also that this man is in a way kind of discipled. He now has Jesus in his life. And you can see that in the way that this man begins to do things that followers of Jesus do in Luke's gospel. So we saw in verse 35, didn't we, the way that this man was sitting at the feet of Jesus. Actually, if we go forward in Luke's gospel to Luke 10, we see the exact same thing with one of Jesus' followers, a lady called Mary, sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to his teaching. Alongside that, he also does something else that is like a follower of Jesus. So verse 39, Jesus says to this man, return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. And he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. And again, actually, that's exactly what followers of Jesus do in Luke's gospel. As we get to the end in Luke 24, Jesus commissions his disciples to go and proclaim forgiveness of sins in Jesus' name. And this man is doing that. He's proclaiming about Jesus. He's been discipled. He now has Jesus in his life. It's a beautiful transformation, isn't it, that Jesus brings to this man. He's restored. He's discipled. And this partial defeat of evil that we see in this story, actually it points forward to a complete defeat of evil. In Luke's gospel, it's like a taster and a sample of the kingdom and the world that Jesus will ultimately bring. And it will be a world with no human evil. There'll be no, well, you know, where no one is made a victim of human trafficking. No one is made a victim of drug trafficking. There's no warfare. That's a very topical one for us at the moment, isn't it? There'll be no hostages, no ravaging of villages, no human evil. And alongside that, it will be a world with no spiritual evil. Jesus will not only deal with the symptom, but the source, and he will banish it from this new world. Jesus is the solution to evil in our world. I think what we're meant to be thinking at this point is, do we want this? And that's an obvious question, isn't it? Of course we want this. Who wouldn't want a world with no evil? It's a bit like asking, you know, do you want a £100 million country house? Or do you want an all-inclusive holiday to the Caribbean? Or do you want some free tickets to Taylor Swift? Obviously, yes. Well, that brings us to the surprise, really, of the rest of the passage. And our second point, Jesus is the solution to evil in our world, but not everyone wants the solution. Of course, some people do want the solution, don't they? And if you're a Christian here today, I guess you're someone who does want this solution that Jesus will bring. And alongside that, this man would come under that category, wouldn't he? Having received the taster and sample in his healing that points to this future kingdom, this man's telling everyone about it, isn't he? He clearly wants the solution as well. But actually, there's another group in this passage that we've brushed over and not engaged with yet. And they're a group that don't seem to want the solution Jesus offers. So let me read from verse 34. When the herdsmen saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. Then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Actually, I think in one sense, it's not that surprising that they're afraid of Jesus in this episode. I mean, if you saw someone who had power over that kind of evil, you would be in awe of them, wouldn't you? You'd be afraid of them, I think. And actually, we saw something similar a few weeks ago in chapter 7 when Andrew was showing us when Jesus interrupts this funeral and he raises this boy from the dead. In that episode, the onlookers, the passage says, fear seized them all. So I don't think it's necessarily surprising that these men in this story fear Jesus. But I guess the question is, what will they do with that fear? In the story in chapter 7, it says, fear seized them all and they glorified God. So this fear of God is fear of Jesus, is coupled with a positive response. But actually, that's not what we see in this passage. Let me read on from verse 36. And those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. So Jesus got into the boat and returned. It's a really surprising response, isn't it? They want to expel Jesus, get rid of him from their region. I guess that would make sense, wouldn't it, if Jesus had used his power for bad. You know, if he'd gone round spreading disease and spreading death and spreading evil all over the region, you could imagine them thinking, we want to get rid of you, Jesus. Would you leave here? You know, you're just causing harm. But actually, that isn't what we see, is it, in Jesus' life? He doesn't use his power for bad. He uses it for good. He uses it to bless others. We see that in Luke's gospel, in the way that he heals diseases and the way that he raises people from death. And in this story, the way that he casts out evil. He uses his power for good, doesn't he? And yet, these people don't want Jesus. They want him gone. They want him out of their region. They want him to leave them alone. They don't want the solution Jesus offers. It's a surprising response, isn't it? But actually, I think it is more relevant to our society than we might at first think. I mean, just take those examples that we thought about at the beginning. Take the human trafficking industry. Imagine that Jesus, he arrived in London and he freed every victim of trafficking in our city today. Lots of people would be really, really happy about that, wouldn't they? You can imagine a hashtag on social media celebrating the fact that Jesus is liberating all of these people. Many would be happy, wouldn't they? But actually, not everyone would be happy about that. I guess those who are being worked for, those who are benefiting from earning money out of human trafficking, they would be saying the same as these people in this region, wouldn't they? Jesus, get out of here. We don't want you here. Leave us alone. Or think about the drug trafficking industry. Again, imagine that Jesus arrives in this city and he dispels every ounce of illegal drugs all over the city. Again, many people would be happy about that, wouldn't they? You can imagine seeing members of the Metropolitan Police on BBC News applauding Jesus for the wonderful work he's done in removing the drug trade from the city. But again, not everyone would be happy, would they? Think especially of those who've profited, those who've benefited, those who've earned maybe thousands of pounds, maybe millions of pounds out of this industry. They would be saying the same thing, wouldn't they, as these men in the story. Jesus, we don't want you here. Leave us alone. You're ruining our industry. Get out. So I think that response is more relevant to our society than we might think, and also more relevant to ourselves than we might think as well. I guess in removing evil from our world, Jesus will remove all scandal, won't he? He will remove all scandal from the religious world. Even just this week, I saw a video and some Twitter posts where some Christians were calling another Christian a false teacher and a liar, and it was a great cause of division and dispute. And to my shame, really, part of me actually wasn't grieved by that, which is, I guess, the right response, isn't it? But actually was kind of excited to see that. I don't know if you ever find that, where you think, oh, you know, how is this person going to respond to that? And, or maybe this person will get involved and say something as well. You know, there's sort of excitement, excitement about it. And it's worth asking myself, you know, would I be happy if Jesus rid the world of that? Alongside removing all scandal from the religious world, he'd remove all scandal from the wider world, wouldn't he? I mean, just imagine that you open your news app, wherever you happen to get your news, and never again would you see a story about misconduct of a politician or a presenter or a public figure. Again, would we be happy about that? Or would we? Do we like looking at those things? Do we enjoy having them in our world, in one sense at least? I guess along with removing scandal, in removing evil, Jesus will also remove all selfishness, won't he? There'll be no opportunities to leave housework for a housemate. There'll be no opportunities to overlook that person that we find difficult. There'll be no opportunities to subtly blame a colleague for a mistake at work. Again, it's worth us asking ourselves, isn't it? Would we be happy about that? Is that the world we want? Do we want Jesus' solution to evil in our world? Well, two things today, really. Firstly, something to be captivated by. Jesus is the solution to evil in our world. And this partial defeat of evil we see, it points us to a complete defeat of evil in the future. It's a taste set and a sample for us of the future kingdom, the future world that Jesus will ultimately bring. A place with no human evil, no trafficking, no warfare. A place with no spiritual evil, where Jesus cuts off evil right at the source. Something to be captivated by, isn't it? But also something to be cautioned by, isn't it? Whether we're here as followers of Jesus or those who are just looking into Christian things, actually there is a caution here, isn't there? That actually not everyone wants the solution. You could say they even prefer to live with the problem than to live without the problem. And Luke, the author of this gospel, he doesn't want us to make that same mistake and to turn our back on Jesus like these people in the country of the Gerasenes and find ourselves in that category. Well, we're going to take a couple of moments just to pause and reflect on what the Lord's been saying to us in this passage, and then we'll be led in prayer.